Spotlight with Stacey Pinkerton.
I have Dawn Watson, who is an inspiring woman, on the line, who is in Brazil. And welcome to the program, Dawn.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Dawn, you have had a tragic childhood, and you are inspiring people today. We're going to get to how you are inspiring people, but tell us a little bit about your story, because it is very, very not only emotional and intriguing, but you were in a religious cult and you escaped. But tell us a little bit more about that.
Yes. Well, I was born into a cult called the Children of God. It started in the U.S. By a man called David Brantberg. And it was around the 60s, and he really wanted to be able to start an amazing group of people that wanted to change the world. And it was in the hippie ages. So he really started off with a great intention, which was unite a lot of young people that were looking for home, that were looking for family, that were looking for a mission, a cause. And he said, you know, I have a new religious group where you can serve God and you can serve Jesus in a very loving and open way, without a lot of dogmatism, without a lot of rules. And so it really started off as a great cult in which people really believed that they were entering into this place where they can serve God, they can talk about Jesus, they can talk about love, and they can change the world with love. And that was the beginning of it in the U.S., and it spread around the world. But as people started to enter into this cult, I think a lot of people had no idea, you know, all these young people joining and really believing that they're going to dedicate their lives to something great and change the world with love, they didn't see that past all the revolutionary and good intentions David Berg had, he was also a very sick man, someone that had a lot of issues in his own personal life, and especially in his sexual life. And he was a pedophile. He used to abuse his own children, but that wasn't something that was known to people. That wasn't a side that he let other people see. So I think as soon as the communities, you know, all these young people joining these big houses and dedicating their life and having everything in common, right? Because he wanted everyone to live like the disciples. And he would always say, you know, we are all one big family. And so it started off as something really beautiful, but then with time he started to bring all of these crazy belief systems into the community and the cult, as in, you know, God is love, and the way to express your love is through your sexuality. And he started to bring sexuality as something so huge into the community and making everyone believe that the purest way that you could be able to share your love and the most powerful way you can share your love is through that sexuality. So, you know, I was born into this cult, and all I knew from that since a child was, you know, I had to memorize the whole Bible, and not only memorize the Bible, but memorize everything that David Berg translated, as in, you know, he used a lot of things of the Bible, but used it in a way that would benefit his own crazy belief systems about sexuality, about how the women had to give their love to men, and the way that women could give their love to men was through their sexuality. So the same way I think I learned how to brush my teeth, I also learned what was sex and how I had to be able to use that as a woman. God gave me the capacity to help men, and I could do that through my sexuality, and that's how I could be a faithful follower to Christ and to the cause. So I think it was a very difficult thing to understand. I mean, I think I never had any other belief systems to actually weigh things and understand and how to balance it out, because we weren't able to leave these big houses, right? My childhood was basically lived inside these big homes with a lot of different missionaries and people that had dedicated their lives. They didn't, you know, we couldn't go to school, or we couldn't leave these communities. So my whole life was inside these homes day and night, and just reading all of his belief systems and really going through a lot of mental manipulation. So as much as I sometimes thought, this doesn't seem right, you know, I think love and pain was something so close. Like, if we didn't memorize, I don't know how many verses, if we didn't want to connect with our uncles, like they would say in the community, everybody was your mother, father, and uncles and aunties. You couldn't have a closed family. Everybody should be your family. So, you know, whenever you didn't give your love to your uncles, or when you didn't memorize, you know, so many verses, then, you know, you would be punished. And they would always say, you know, God, he punishes and he hurts those that he loves. So as a young child, for me, love and pain was something so together. And God, to me, was a man that desired me, that wanted me. And it was so difficult understanding that concept, but at the same time, I didn't know anything different than that, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it was a very difficult growing up in an environment like that, because at the same time, when there were so many things that weren't right, that brought me so much pain, and that I saw so much pain, you know, specifically from the women, so much pain that the women had to go through too, and how much they had to sacrifice their own happiness and or their own desires and wants to be able to be like, no, I have to dedicate myself to this cause, and I have to serve men and this cause with my body, with my love. And they really believed that they were doing it for a cause. They really believed that they were doing the right thing, because they were also so mental manipulated in such a way that David Berg, you know, he brought all these teenagers that weren't bad people at all. They were really, really good people that were ready to dedicate their life for a cause to help the world. But at the same time, he found a way of gaining their trust, and then afterwards manipulating them in such a way that they became blind, that they were doing bad things thinking it was good.
Abusing power.
Sorry?
He was abusing power.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I'm growing up and seeing all of that, and I remember always asking myself if there was something out of that, if there was something that was different, if there was a God that was different, if there was a way that we could leave and be able to be owners of our own mind, owners of our own decisions, and not be like robots, everybody having to follow one leader, and whatever that leader said, everyone did, because they believed that that leader was so close to God. And if they didn't follow those rules, that they were selfish, or they were really wrong people, or they were going to be punished by God. So I think I found myself always thinking, if I ever leave, what's going to happen? Do you think God, you know, is God going to punish and hate me forever? And growing up, some people started leaving the community, and a lot of them left and ended up killing themselves and not being able to cope with the pain that they carried after the community. And what was always said inside the community was, okay, you know, these people that left and they took their lives, that's the punishment. You know, you're going to suffer mentally and emotionally so bad that, you know, God's going to take you one way or the other. So I struggled a lot with, okay, if I stay, I'm going to suffer. If I go, I'm going to suffer. But I thought, I need to find a way out. I need to find somehow other answers that I haven't been able to find.
So you knew that you had intuition you needed to follow.
Sorry?
You knew that you had an intuition that you needed to follow.
Yes, I believe that one thing that really, really began to help me was, because I couldn't read anything, I couldn't connect with anyone that had different ideas, I couldn't talk to anyone, I felt like instead of going to find answers outside of me, I need to close myself and try to find answers inside of me. So one of the things that I just started doing at a certain moment in my life, I just shut out everybody. I would, you know, do all my chores, take care of everything, all my responsibilities inside the community, but I really closed down. There was a couple of years people hardly ever heard my voice. I really closed down and began to start a personal dialogue with myself. And I started writing diaries. And in my diaries, you know, I couldn't speak doubts. I couldn't ever say to someone, I think this is wrong. Is there a way out? I could never say that. But in my diary, I could have a safe place where I could be able to start dialoguing with myself and saying, you know, what if love is different? What if this doesn't have to be like this? How would life be if I could make my own decisions? You know, what would God be if he wasn't the abuser, you know? And I think I just started to really have this personal dialogue with myself. And that's when I started to discover that all of the answers were really inside me, and that every time I wrote and wrote and wrote in these diaries, it was almost like I found more hope that there was something out there that was different than everything I lived, even if I never actually saw it or felt it. And I just felt this connection that if I could find the strength that was deep, deep inside me, I could go through any pain that I was going through to find my strength to get out of there and try something different and try to regain my life and see how I could live a life without, you know, everything that I learned my entire life to be true.
Don, I have a question. I have a question about you being in this commune. Where were your blood family, your parents? Did you have any siblings? Were they all there as well?
Yes, they were. But like I said, many of them, David Gottberg, he didn't believe in closed families. He believed that everybody should be broken up so there's no closed families. Everybody should, you know, be everybody's brothers and sisters and mothers and brothers. So many times, fathers and mothers didn't live in the same houses as their children. Sometimes, many of our siblings sometimes didn't live all together. There were some moments in my life where we lived all in the same communities, and then some moments that we didn't live in the same communities. But, you know, my mother was one of the most incredible women I know, and she, you know, really was the most beautiful soul that wanted to serve God and wanted to help. But just like her and so many women in the community, you know, went through so much mental manipulation in the cult to be able to serve God. And many of them would say, you know, to the mothers, you have to go out and you guys have to, you know, spread the word of God and go and help other people. And don't worry that you have uncles and aunties and other people that are going to be mothers and aunties to your daughters and to your sons. So a lot of the mothers actually had no idea what was really happening with their children because they couldn't have that total control over their children the whole time because we were always separated. Each one had a different mission. You know, the mothers had to go out and spread the gospel and talk about Jesus in the Bible. And then other people took care of the children back in the communities. And many times they switched children from community to communities. So it was a little bit messy. But I can say it was a feeling of a lot of independency. I think growing up, not only me, but I think a lot of the children from the community became very independent, as in, you know, we didn't know how it was to actually have like a big, nice family structure united. But at the same time, it also helped us grow up a little and have a little bit more responsibility for ourselves because we all have to kind of cope with, you know, not having that structure.
Okay. So, Dawn, you decided to leave this commune, and you were at the age of 13, and you ran away. You ran away from the place that you knew of as home. Where did you go, and how did you survive?
Yeah. Well, actually, I started to run away. You know, I would just, it was actually funny because they would tell a lot that outside of our homes, it was the system. It was a place where there was a lot of evil. And so I think the beginning of it was just leaving that house and visiting my neighbors. That was like leaving the community, was actually just stepping out and being able to connect with the outside world, which is something so forbidden. And my neighbors were actually drug dealers and would sell guns. And I was like, oh my gosh, these people, then it really is from the devil, you know? I was like, oh my goodness, it was like my first, one of my first connections with the outside world. But the most incredible thing was, as I started to connect with them, and I would spend hours talking with them, and then I would come back into the house, and then I would sneak out again and be able to have time with them. And I remember in that come and go, I remember speaking with them, and I could see that they knew that what they were doing was something bad, that they were ready to pay the consequences for it. They would say, you know, if the police come and get us, we know that we will go to jail. We know we're not doing something right. And at that moment, I felt like, oh my gosh, the people in the community, they are not understanding the consequences they will pay for this because they're doing something bad but thinking it's good. And I think in that moment, I thought, you know, the difference is that the people in the community, they're blind. They don't see. And therefore, the consequences will come, and they won't understand, you know, how terrible that is because they're not seeing the bad that they're doing. They really believe it's something good. So I think in that moment, I felt like I need to keep on finding a way to mentally come back to a stable place myself, and then somehow go back and try to help people wake up and not become blind, because I really at that moment saw how blind they were. So, you know, I finally, from running out of the community so long, I was definitely, they said I was the rock in that form, very worried that I was going to, you know, rock all the other kids from the community and be a bad influence. So they finally also let me leave. And I just, for a couple of, I think around 2 years, I just went back and forward from ex-community members that they had left, because some people had left already and had established some homes and places that they would stay. So I practically jumped from place to place for a couple of years, trying to find myself, trying to understand about life, trying to understand about, you know, who I was in all of this and who I wanted to be. And then I think around when I was 15 to 16, I finally was able to reconnect with my family that had left the community, that had found the strength to also leave and begin a journey towards healing themselves and reconstructing themselves. So...
Wow.
It was quite a journey. Yeah.
You're very courageous. So you were able to leave the commune. One question, does this place still exist today?
No. This community, it finished probably around 10 years ago, around that. And 9 to 10 years ago, it finished. So it doesn't exist anymore. Everybody that left are still survivors and people that are trying to reconstruct themselves. Because, you know, like I said, this community was not made out of monsters. It was made out of really good people that ended up doing wrong things because of the influence and the mental manipulation. I think some people underestimate the power of mental manipulation, that you can get someone within that has a huge heart and that wants to do something so good. And if you find a very intelligent way, which that what, you know, David Berg was, you know, a very intelligent man, but he even made prostitution, which was something that happened in the community, something for a cause, because there was a moment in the community that they needed to make money so that the community can continue to survive. And he found a way of saying, okay, you know, let's tell our women that the men outside of the community, they're starving. They don't have love. They don't know what real love is. And the women in our community, they know what love is. They're connected to God's love. So he started saying, women, you guys have to go outside of this community and connect with these men that are in the system, men that don't know what love is, and you guys, you know, sacrifice yourself, sacrifice your body, sacrifice your own desires. It doesn't matter if you feel attracted or not. That's selfishness. You need to, you that have the purest love of God, you need to go out there and give love to these men. So, you know, the acts of prostitution, he had a way of manipulating it into a way where he made them feel that they were doing it for a cause, you know, doing it, but they didn't do what they felt, I'm being selfish. I'm not giving someone the purest love when I have it myself, you know? Mm-hmm. So even things that you would look and you would judge someone as, oh, how can someone do that? You don't know what motivates that person to do it. And when many times that person, the act can be something very wrong, but what is motivating that person is it comes from a greater root of manipulation. And so, you know, I think one thing that hurt a lot of these people that left the community is that they felt so judged, and they felt like, oh my God, everybody looks at them as such terrible people. But in my eyes, you know, even going through everything I went through and going through my own forgiveness process of forgiving what had happened to me, it truly came from being able to truly see what was behind the wrong acts, what was behind the attitude of someone hurting me. But that the truth was that attitude came from a root. And what was that root, you know? And to me, it all began with David Berg, someone that consciously made the decision to manipulate and use all these young teenagers that soon became adults, and that believed so much in David Berg that they became blind. And whatever David Berg said, if he said, you know, jump off a cliff, everybody would do that because they truly believed that he loved them, first of all, and that whatever he said was really connected to God and to the truth, you know?
I understand. So, Don, what happened to David in the end?
What happened to who? David Berg?
Yes.
Yeah, so, like, life is so perfect in everything he does, and David Berg would drink a lot, and he ended up having cancer in his throat, and he passed away, and when he passed away, his wife continued the community, but definitely after he was gone, a lot of things started to get better in the community. But of course, his wife continued on a path that wasn't good at all either. I think she wanted to continue his revolutionary belief system, but definitely after he passed away, things got a lot better in the community.
I see.
But yeah, he didn't stay with us long. Yeah.
Okay. So, Don, how is it that you have taken all of these things, a negative, and changed it into a positive and purpose for you? What happened after you left this community, and when did you start to really fully recover?
Yeah. I can say that for a very long time, after writing all of these, my diaries in the community, and feeling like I was alone in this, it was a moment I thought, if I don't fight for me, if I don't take care of me, if I don't find hope in me, then no one's going to do that for me. So I think I started to really stop complaining that I was alone, that I didn't have support, that I was, you know, that no one would take care of me and help me. And I said, you know, I got your back, Don. You know, I just felt like if I could partnership with myself, with the stronger part in me, I could find a way to get out of that. And in that process of going through all of my pain, I discovered that every time that I tried to run away from that pain, every time that I tried to ignore that pain, not want to admit it, not want to talk about it, not want to work through it, it just made things worse. Until I said, you know what, I need to find a way. I always felt deeply like I wanted to live a life in which I could be able to be free. I always had this thing, I need to be free. And when I finally left the community, I was like, I'm going to be free. And then I noticed that that freedom of the cult, I didn't have the people anymore. I didn't have to live in that closed home. But I was still a prisoner in my own pain. That keeping all of that pain inside me still made me a prisoner. And I felt like if I really want to be free, that I, the things that I dreamed of my whole life, that it wasn't only leaving the cult, it was also leaving the pain that was locking me up inside. And I knew that the only way to be free from the pain that was locking me up inside was to let it go. That I didn't need to carry it for too long anymore, that it didn't serve me anymore, and that I needed to liberate that pain in me. And so I decided to start take a journey into my pain, to understand it, to find peace with it, to give it a purpose so that I could finally let it go. Because I also thought, how can I let this go if I can't understand the why? And I had a very special person that was like a father in my life. And he entered into my life when I was around 16 to 17. And he really believed in me. And I think he would look at me, and I looked like a little boy. I hated being like a woman, because a woman represented to me weakness. It represented pain. And so I wanted to run, you know, we could run away from that. So I looked like a little boy. I would dress like a boy. I would act like a boy. I was like, okay, if men do this to me, then I'm going to be tougher than men, and no one will be able to hurt me anymore. But that was just a big mask, you know. Inside, it was a very hurt little girl. And this man, he was like a father. And he really showed me what love was, and he believed in me. And he just said, look, I know that all this mask that you're wearing of a super aggressive girl, of a super mean person, you know, that is just a mask that you're trying to, it's like clothes that don't fit you anymore. You know, and he said, I see the real you, and you are a beautiful person. And he said, you know, you have a voice, and one day the world will hear your voice. And for some reason, he really saw the best of me. And he helped me begin to see that I actually did have something good in me. And if I could go through all my pain and liberate all of that was stuck, I could find something really beautiful that was underneath all that pain. And he gave me a safe place for me to heal.
Yeah.
So from my 15 until 19, I closed myself to the world. I hadn't had any relationship. I didn't want to connect to anyone. I wanted to connect to me. I wanted to heal me. So I literally had, you know, a couple of years of just going through my process of, okay, how do I take this pain out? Forgiveness. Forgive. Understand. Let that go. And I really started to look back at all the people that I judged, and I said, why didn't you protect me? Why didn't you do this? Why did you hurt me? And I started to see beyond their actions. I started to see that they were also children like me, insecure and hurt. And that pain generated pain. No one that's generating love will generate pain. So I said everyone that generated pain in me is because they were generating pain in themselves.
Yeah.
And that cycle continues. Every time I'm in pain, I generate pain on the other person, and that cycle continues. And I felt like, how can I ask someone that is in pain to give me love? They didn't have that. The people that couldn't protect me, it wasn't because they didn't want to protect me. It was because they couldn't. They didn't have that within themselves, because they couldn't even protect themselves. And that's when I decided I want to liberate that, because I don't want to be carrying pain inside me. I want to change that generation. I want to start generating love and transform the pain that was in me in love, so that I can change that cycle. No more passing pain forward, you know? And so I had to go through my own process of forgiving, because I had become a very mean person too. I had become a very abusive person too, because of all the pain I had lived. When we're in pain, we want someone to feel that same pain. And I, you know, I became that person that wanted other people to feel the same pain I had felt. And I just came to the moment that I had to learn to forgive myself, and also understand I generated pain, because one day because I was feeling that pain too.
Yes.
And so I think it really went through the process of let me forgive myself, let me let that go, and let me forgive the people that entered my life and hurt me, and let me turn this pain into my biggest strength, and let me find a way that I can love people, I can see past the pain, I can see the child that's beneath all that pain. And I started with myself. I can say I could only love other people and forgive other people because I chose to do that for myself first, you know?
So now that you've gone through a post-traumatic growth yourself, you have all this written down. You ended up in a presentation, a date with destiny. Tell us briefly about that.
Yeah. Well, a date with destiny was a very specific moment in my life where I had gone through a lot of my own personal growth and transformation, but I was in a moment of, how could I be able to help other people? I saw so many people close to me. There was so much pain. And I wanted to be able to live in a place of my truth. I had gone through my healing, but I still felt like I was stepping on eggs, that I couldn't express it to the world because somehow they would judge me. Somehow they wouldn't understand me. And that got me so much sadness to a point that I felt like taking my life because I felt if I can't use everything I lived to be able to help other people, then what's the meaning to it? I just felt like there was no meaning. And one day I was expressing that to a close friend of mine, and that friend said, you need to meet this man called Tony Robbins. A lot of your personal process that you went through to heal yourself, that's what this guy talks about. And I had never read self-help books or gurus. The last thing I read in this lifetime was another guru or self-help or reader. But he said, you just need to hear this guy. Don't look at him. Don't, because if you're seeing him, you're like, oh, God, this guy's just like, you're gonna go back to the patterns of what you lived before. He said, just listen to what comes out of this guy's mouth, because the process he helps other people go through, it's a process that you yourself did alone. So there's something there that's really important that you need to see. So I was like, okay, so I went on YouTube, and I started listening to him. And I was like, this guy, he talks the language of the soul. He talks of something that is so much more profound than was what I did when I was all alone in the community. And I had never had access to these things. So that blew my mind. So I said, I don't know why, but I just need to connect with this human being. It wasn't the persona. It wasn't that the self-help guru. It was the human being that said everything that I had heard in myself, inside of me, in the community. So I said, okay, I need to connect. So at the time, I sold everything I had. I bought my ticket, and I went to meet with him. And I think when I got there at the event, I was like, oh, God, this is crazy. Everybody's jumping up and down and screaming and, hey, let's go, let's go. And I was like, I'm in the wrong place. I cannot stay here. But then I felt like just stay here and connect to him because he has something that really connects with you. And I think that, I pushed myself through the event until finally Tony, asked who was suicidal. And I think for the first time in my life, I said, I'm so tired of, not letting the world truly see what's inside me. I need to let it go. I need to share it. And I need to somehow connect with him and find help, And it was the most powerful moment of my life because for the first time in my life, in a room filled with strangers, we became family. It was a moment where I felt like I just, let my truth come out without no fear. Like, I didn't care in that moment what people would think, what people would say. I just wanted to live in my truth and just let it all out, what was hurting. And I knew in that moment that Tony could see beyond my words. And I felt that love that connects us, even if we don't know each other, even if we're from different countries, we don't speak the same language, but we're human beings and we connect to the truth. Because I think deep inside, we all have our own truth. We all know what it is and how it feels to go through pain. And then I connected with Tony, and not only him, but thousands of people in that room. When they came up to me, they said, "Your truth liberated my truth." And today, I experienced what true love is. And that was the most amazing moment, because that's when I felt like if I wanted to help people, I didn't have to do anything. I just had to be. I had to be truthful. I had to be me. I had to be open. And, you know, I think it was kind of like that sensation of taking off your clothes and showing your scars. And then all of a sudden, everybody feels free to take off their clothes and say, you know what, I've got scars too. Why are we all trying to use so much clothes and judge each other when in the truth, you know, we're all the same. We all carry our scars.
Yeah.
And it was that feeling, you know, of people from all over the world just loving me, just supporting me, and also saying, you know, you liberated me. Your truth liberated me. So it was truly one of the most beautiful moments of my life.
And from that, you ended up writing a book, which is now available also not only in Portuguese, but in English.
Yes. It's on Amazon already. It's called My Journey Back Home. And why did I put that name? Because I truly believe that home is a place inside of us. It's a safe place within that you can be in hell if you connect with that home in you, that safe place in you. You will find a way. You will find love. You will find hope. You will find your strength. And I know that because I found that home in the most unsafe places. But whenever I connected inside of me, I found a safe place. And so I truly believe, and I wrote that book because I wanted every single person to know that independent of the pain we go through, independent of how far away sometimes you feel from yourself, especially people, you know, that have gone through abuse. It's a feeling that someone robbed you from you. You feel like a visitor in your own body and in your own life. And so I always say, you know, it's no matter whoever robbed you from your innocence or from your childhood or from difficult things, there is always a way back to yourself. And you don't have to be a visitor in your own home. That is your home. Take it back. And the only way to do that is if you're willing to go through a journey, through your pain, and then get out from the other side, and you'll find love, and you'll find your strength, and you'll find your power.
Excellent.
So that's the biggest message I wanted to send out to people. And it's on Amazon already, so everyone can go get a copy of it.
Well, also, Dawn Watson, we also have your book on our TRA bookshop, and the name of the book is My Journey Back Home, a story that will help you reconnect with yourself, recover yourself, love, overcome the pain of your past, and no one would know better than that than you, and it is, as you say, it's forgiveness, and we all have goodness. We all have good in us. Dawn, I wish you all the best, and so pleased that you decided to share your story with us, because we all can learn from it, and it's just speaking the truth, as you say.
Yes, exactly. And it's so powerful. I am so blessed nowadays, because now I have a project not only in Brazil but worldwide, helping, you know, not only women but men too, and children and teenagers, all be able to live in a place of, you know, living in their truth and being able to come back home to themselves. You know, I think everyone, you know, after the documentary, I received emails from every single person from every single continent. It was incredible how many people emailed me and spoke with me and shared very similar stories of the abuses they went through or the pain they'd gone through, and that through my story, they found hope to be able to reconstruct their life again. And I think that's the biggest message I just want to be able to spread more around the world, is that no matter the pain that you go through, there is always a way to reconstruct yourself and turn that pain into love and into your strength. You know, so today I have the pleasure to be able to help, you know, young girls that have gone through abuse, that have gone through rape, and help men that have also been the abusers, have also once been abused and deserve the same, you know, love and healing that all of us deserve. You know, I don't believe in monsters. I just believe in human beings. They're hurt. And whenever we're hurt, we continue the cycle of hurting other people. So I believe that punishment does not help people, but compassion and love does, and it transforms anyone.
Excellent, so, Don. I think your book
I'm a living proof.
You are, and I think your book should also be in every school and also in every prison.
Yes, and hopefully it will be one day.
Don Watson, her book is My Journey Back Home, a story that will help you reconnect with yourself, recover your self-love, overcome the pain of your past. Thank you, Don, very much for joining me tonight on Spotlight Talk Radio Europe, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure. Lots and lots of love.
We let our programs do the talking.